Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Yeah, there we go. Now we are coming to you live, part of Tie Day Friday from outside the Brogue Inn in Tralee, outside Kirby's Brogue Inn on Rock Street in Tralee. And there's been a lot of different political machinations on this street over the last number of decades. Speeches given by some of the great leaders of the country and otherwise. But we're going to talk about the ramifications of what happened in the last 7 days now, because John Downing is with us on the line for a call from the Dáil. And John, we'd normally start on the Friday after a budget, and we'd speak the whole show about budget. But really, it was all overshadowed by the events of last weekend. A presidential bombshell with, first of all, the story in the Irish Independent about the tenant that wasn't paid back the rent. Then Jim Gavin makes the stunning announcement on Sunday evening that he's pulling out of the race. And it sparked off an internal sort of war inside in Fianna Fáil. Questions at one stage about Micheál Martin's leadership. What do you make of it all this Friday morning?
Excuse me, Jerry, how are you? The thing is, here we are, 2 weeks out. It's beginning to get real. It's a two-horse race. Heather Humphreys, the sort of government establishment candidate, Catherine Connolly coming in from the left, the opposition of the whole thing. The withdrawal of Jim Gavin is a ginormous blow. It's a huge blow for Fianna Fáil. It may be the beginning of a slow exit for Micheál Martin. Nothing mad is going to happen just immediately. But point being made, the last debacle that Fianna Fáil had in a presidential election back in 1990, when Brian Lenehan Sr. Was on the ropes, began something which we saw the exit, finally the exit of Charlie Haughey within 2 years. So a good deal less. So a lot of disarray. The impact of Jim Gavin's withdrawal, by the way, he wasn't playing. I mean, he clearly hadn't made the transition to being a politician. And we saw the Sunday Independent opinion poll last Sunday. Catherine Connolly in the lead on 32%. Heather Humphreys behind her on 23%. Jim Gavin on just 15%. But the calculation there was early enough in the campaign and knock a few points off Catherine Connolly in the course of the upcoming row. And Heather Humphreys could come home on Jim Gavin transfers. The withdrawal of Jim Gavin from that really kind of spooks that type of calculation, really upends it. So we don't know where we're going. It's certainly the week's tumultuous events certainly suit Catherine Connolly far more than Heather Humphreys.
Yeah, and look, we'll talk about Fianna Fáil in a moment, but just on Jim Gavin himself and the sort of campaign that was run, John, for him or by him. Michael Cahill, Fianna Fáil TD for Kerry, was on the programme yesterday. He made the point, the valid point, I think is missed by a lot of people when they say, politicians, they're all at it, anyone can do it. Anyone can't do it. This is the point.
Yeah,
and his
absolutely.
Campaign was faltering, his social media was bad, his delivery was poor as well. He hadn't seemed to have been prepared properly for the cut and thrust of it, the flow you need on a communications level for politics and politicians. I'm going to play you a clip, John, and this is of him speaking on this programme Friday 2 weeks ago, which seems like an eternity given all that's happened since then. But here's a little bit of Jim Gavin talking to me during that interview.
You know, I believe in Ireland. I believe in the power of the present that you're referring to. And I believe in a time of division. So you have extremes to the left and to the right. And I'm pretty much a centrist, but pragmatic. And I do stand for social justice. And I've, I've seen that in the Dublin's northeastern city, where I've been the chair of that particular implementation board for the last 3 years, where I'm an independent chair, volunteer my time, but I'm working with government agencies, I'm working with government departments, I'm working with NGO services who provide for, you know, single parents, provide educational support, provide youth services, provide for drug rehabilitation in Dublin, in one of the most challenged areas in the country.
Yeah.
And that Kerry people will be very familiar from the path that you've worn to Croke Park, going through Mountjoy Square or coming up by O'Connell Schools, the North Circular Road, or indeed my time in Africa with Bohor, a great charity where farmers and a lot of Kerry farmers have given livestock to the poorest of the poor to help them help themselves. Yeah. So that is all about, you know, bringing people together.
Can a president reach those people though?
They can,
the extremes
they
you're talking about. Because let's just take the tricolour. You were in the Irish Army for decades, right? And you have an understanding what the tricolour is, what it represents. You said you believe in Ireland. There are people now on either side of the extreme divide, perhaps maybe borrowing from the divisions in politics in other countries where it's become extremely tribal. Yeah. How do you reach out to those people?
They see me as Jim, who chairs it is a government task force, but I'm independent. I do pro bono. I just do volunteer my time. I've walked in Mountjoy Square at night time meeting people who are homeless. I've been in the schools in O'Connell Schools only last week with the kids trying to get funding for their Daniel O'Connell, as you know, O'Connell Schools, and there's a great connection with Kerry in that regard, trying to get funding for their to refurbish the hall, because the kids, when it rains, have to do their PE up and down the corridor of school. So they know me as Jim. And my...
So there you go, John. That was him talking. And I look from that interview, that morning before he came in, I had seen the social media, I'd seen some of his performance on a number of different things, and I thought he wasn't the most smooth or flowing of a politician. He had a lot of work to do, I thought. But I thought he did actually quite well that morning. But then from there, went on to the debate, and it was back to... It looked like an ill-prepared candidate for the realities of modern politics. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so, yes. And my attention was drawn to that interview in the last few days because it was cited to me as one of the few really good interviews he did. He was, in that instance, succeeding in connecting with people. He was in his comfort zone of football, realizing how Kerry people know the Dublin inner city because you're so often in Croke Park. But Michael Cahill is right. I mean, that was the one swallow which did not a summer make. Michael Cahill is right. Politicians have skills which are frequently not much noticed, not as valued as they should. Jim Gavin wasn't a first cousin of a politician. In fact, he wasn't a 31st cousin of a politician. And it's a sort of factor X. You know it, you see it.
Where Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin and Jack Chambers come in? Because that morning in Killarney, Jim Gavin was on his own. There was no Fianna Fáil councillor or politician with him. Now, others were out during the day. He went to the Listowel races, went over to Tralee. There was a turnout there, but there was a feeling that internally there were problems in Fianna Fáil and a rump of the parties, grassroots and councillors, who were not happy with how Billy Kelleher was treated, not happy with the process. And that all came out, didn't it, in the appeal, in the five-hour parliamentary party meeting this week.
Yes, absolutely. Look, there was a feeling that he was a parachutist, terrible pun intended, as an airman from the Air Corps and heavily involved in aviation. There was a feeling that he was an import and not entirely welcome. And that's always going to be a difficulty. There was a view. Micheál Martin had privately expressed the view, look, we can train him on media, we can train him how to connect with people and all that. Fine, you can. A lot of stuff can be learnt. But equally, it's hard if you're not somebody who can connect with people, talk to people, listen to people. That is a difficult thing to learn. It's a difficult thing to learn over a short period of time. Michael Cahill's comments, I suppose he'd be very conscious himself of he learned many of his own political lessons from his father, Tom, a long-time Kerry County councillor and Fianna Fáil activist. So, yeah, I mean, an awful lot there. really, it was calamitous the way the guy crashed out. I mean, even the way he crashed out of it, that he wasn't prepared to stand his ground and fight. Most politicians would, and he probably would never have been able to win, but he could have clawed back a lot of ground if he had thought about it and had more stuff in him. Basically, the whole thing is such a colossal misadventure, and it's very heavily damaging for Fianna Fáil any way you look at it.
Yeah. And does it mean now, has the clock been set? Because the questions are about, and we'll find out maybe if there's a review or independent review of who knew what when in Fianna Fáil, what level of preparation was put in there, what backing he got, how maybe he was left out in the cold a little bit in relation to how he was prepared and all that. But then internally in Fianna Fáil, what happened this week with the Parliamentary Party? Is that a fundamental realigning, reassessment of Micheál Martin's running of the party? Was he running by fiat? Was he the boss? His way it goes. Like, it occurred to me that what happened on Wednesday night was, it was like the English barons of the 13th century going forward to King John with the Magna Carta. This is our list of freedoms that we now want in how this party is run and how you've been running it by word of law for the last number of years.
I see a lot in what you're saying there. The point, I suppose, is that the leader of any party, a lot depends on the leader. As pointed out in the past, when Fine Gael were very low to the ground and battered after the 2002 general election, Frank Flannery brought out a report. One of the standout thing that always stays in my mind is that a poor party with a strong leader can do. But the reverse is most unlikely. In other words, if you haven't got a good leader, you have nothing. Micheál Martin bet the farm on Jim Gavin. He felt he could do something with Jim Gavin, run a different kind of campaign, take away the questions about housing, health and other long-running problems that this government is struggling with, and talk about leadership, sport, youth, things like that. The difficulty was Jim Gavin didn't make the transition to politics. And so Micheál Martin, I suppose as party leader, was entitled to hearing and to support in his big gamble, but it's backfired and he has to pay a big price. So too does Jack Chambers, who is now being referred to as the former future leader. He was being groomed as the heir apparent. He's very closely connected to this Jim Gavin fiasco. So his kudos is also seriously damaged. It depends what goes from here, Micheál is in trouble.
And we'll see from there, John, what happens with regards to that. But look, what good or otherwise did this do in terms of the budget this week? It kind of overshadowed it, but looking at the budget itself, it's a kind of a curious one. On one level, it's steady as she goes. Pascal Donohue and Jack Chambers can claim prudence was the order of the day. They still increase spending by 11%. So there are questions about the stability of our tax base. What do you think the overall view is now, a few days out politically, on this budget and how it was delivered?
Well, it certainly won't endear reluctant voters if there wasn't much in it for the punters. Yes, certainly, I would agree that it was a budget targeting, trying to do something for investment and trying to do something for the macro economy. There is still, you are right, we're still in this sort of increasing spending all the time. Interesting that inflation suddenly seems maybe on the up. We'll have to wait and see the trend, but 2.7%. Remember the European Central Bank, the single currency membership rules tell us that we should be on 2% inflation. So we'll be watching that trend very closely. But this budget is not a popular one. It's a kind of strange one, but it was overshadowed, as you say, by the hullabaloo around the presidency.
Even here locally in Kerry, it's kind of interesting. And look, when it comes to the budget, this is the first budget of this government, and it became apparent this week that really in Kerry, we only have one opposition TD, Deputy Pat Daly of Sinn Féin, and four government TDs or government supporting TDs, two of them ministers. The interaction got particularly nippy and nasty between Pat Daly and Michael Healy-Rae. He put out a video attacking both Healy-Rae's, but particularly Michael Healy-Rae over supporting carbon tax. And it was became clear when they entered into government, but he was urging them to somehow vote against it. Michael Healy-Rae pushing back very testily against Pat Daly, accusing him of mistruths and him being, you know, powerless and useless. So there's an interesting Healy-Rae versus Sinn Féin dynamic coming. Or is that always likely to happen when you've one opposition TD against four in a county?
Yes, I suppose so. And he can. Pat Daly has grounds for bringing things back to the Healy-Rae's opposition to things like carbon tax. And now Michael Healy-Rae is arguing, look, you never get everything that you look for when you're doing a deal. And we're supporting the government, and in the broader sphere, it's beneficial. But that can be a hard road to hoe at times, and we will see much more of this. Mind you, Sinn Féin's position on carbon taxes and other things is, in my view, rather bogus also. I mean, basically, they're always saying, oh, well, we want to see pro-environmental issues, we want to tackle climate change, but not in this way and not now. And that as well is, you know, is a bit hard to take sometimes too.
Okay, can I ask you, John, about another thing that was said during the budget? Didn't get much attention. There was a number of promises made, one in relation to a review of disability services, how they're delivered, particularly Jack Chambers, when he talked about, again, the record level of money going into health. And yes, there was talks about beds and nurses, but he also promised a review of how the department operates, how things are managed in our health service. And this is long been a criticism of the money we shovel in. Yes, increase in population is something to do with. You have to spend so much money just to keep things standing still. But is that going to be the big test here? Is that really going to happen? Because we had this incident about a month ago of a new Minister for Health going into the matter in Dublin and going in without managers, arriving an hour early, walking directly into the A&E. Then there was this showdown meeting between herself and David Begg, the lifelong trade unionist who was chair of the board. He accused her of trying to act like God. Her department hit back. He didn't like her summoning managers to explain, you know, heavy trolley numbers at the weekend. What happened there? Why wasn't that done right? I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but is the minister not in charge? Like, it's going to be her head on the block in a couple of months' time or a year's time when there's a motion of no confidence, as there always is in a health minister? Or is she trying to do something new here to try and change the dynamic and to try and put pressure on managers to say, look, you're not doing your job right. Like, you can't fire anyone in the health service. A minister can't really fire anybody. But here you have a senior lifelong trade unionist hitting back and saying, how dare you pull people up when you feel they're not doing your job?
Yeah, I mean, there is a dichotomy there. And we learned this week, among the things, that 27 billion euro of our tax money goes into the health service. One in four of every euro spent by government is spent on health. And Jennifer Kyle McNeill is right to say, look, we could get better value for that. The screaming match between herself and David Begg, rather public, is very unfortunate and pointless. And I think she is trying to see, you know, if we spend all that much money, could we not do better? And it is a point worth making. By the way, one third of everything that's spent in health goes on wages and pensions. So, you know, when you start looking for economies in health or in public expenditure generally, you find that there's a lot of stuff is completely nailed down before you go anywhere.
But is there an issue, John, when you're trying to get better value, trying to change things? Yeah. When you're trying to change things in that way, and there's that level of pushback, like, it's long been thought that one of the problems with the health service is that we'll call them the special interests, or maybe the uncooperative side of, no, we're not doing that, we're not changing the way we work. And I'm not saying that's the cause for everything, but is that one of the nuts that'll have to be cracked if this is ever going to be solved? If we're ever
going to get better management delivery at a certain level? The late Tommy Gorman of RTE, who was involved in one of these assessments of the health system on grounds that he had a long encounter with the health service before he died, God rest him. But he used to make the point that there are so many vested interests, all of the health unions, all of the various actors, doctors, nurses, ancillary backup staff in hospitals and in the health service generally. And he used to use the metaphor of, where do you park your car at the hospital? Well, all the staff and all the so on and so forth, according to a pecking order, they're all up around the front of the hospital, around the door. Where do the patients park? They park round the back in a most disadvantageous situation. They very often have to pay for parking, etc., etc. So, you know, he used that as a metaphor for what the health service can be at its less encouraging manifestations. So, Jennifer Carol McNeill's attempt to address these issues and say these things, I think, is very welcome.
Yeah, indeed. John, we'll talk more. We'll talk more as well about the campaign. There'll be an interesting weekend. Catherine Connolly and Heather Humphreys battling it out over the next week or so. So we'll get to that maybe next Friday when we know a lot more about what's been happening post-debates and everything like that. But John, thanks a million for talking to us on the programme this morning.
Thanks, Jerry.